Welcome to Local Music Somewhere, where your voice is always heard. On our Beats radio and media streaming service for today's hot and trending topics. Now let's get into it.
Welcome to rbeats.com and Local Music Somewhere. Today we have a special guest because, as you know, we're always trying to help independent artists and help them to know more about the industry so that they can achieve their dreams and know that these dreams are real and they are really in the driver's seat and they need to know more about that. So today I was able to secure a very special guest. She is an entertainment attorney. She's an artist manager and she's general counsel for Symphonic Distribution. And today we're going to talk about how you do have the power and the tools that you have for that. So would you welcome my guest today, Petra Center. Welcome, Petra.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Well, let's, you know, when I was telling RBeats a little more about you, I kind of described you, and I'll say this on the air, but I was like, if you've seen the show Entourage, you know Ari Gold, how he's this guy that just goes and makes things happen. She is Ari Gold without all the cursing and everything that happened. You know, you may be that too, but without all that, tell us a little bit more and tell our listeners more about who you are. As far as, let's start with your background. You know, how did you get started in music?
Well, I grew up in Sumter, South Carolina. So I think that that's probably not a hotbed of, you know, entertainment law or artists. There was one band I used to love from Sumter called Seven Nations, a Celtic rock band. But other than that, not a ton of artists coming out of that area. But it was something that I had a passion for very early on. I would travel with my friends to go see shows, and I just caught that fever of, I want to work in the music business, but wasn't quite sure how to make it happen. And when I was in college, ended up starting an online magazine with some friends of mine that caused me to just travel all over the Southeast. We did photography, we did interviews, and it started to build some momentum. It was never something that generated an income. Obviously, it was always just really more of a hobby. But it really introduced me more into that fold. And like you said, I think when we were talking off camera earlier, you have to have that passion,
right,
and drive to propel that forward. And it's like, you're not coming from a space of, this is something that happens every day. So even for me, just being somebody who's adjacent to the industry or somebody who wants to work in the industry, not as an artist, but as some type of a professional, like, you have to really want that when you're not coming from the space of where it already exists. You have to carve your own way.
Yeah, you're instead of finding a place at someone's table, you're creating your own table sometimes. And it doesn't matter where you're from. You can be, like when my brother and I started, we were in, I think, a place called Crozet, Virginia, or maybe it was somewhere around there. And at the time, there was nothing. You know, it's close to Charlottesville, Virginia, but it was before Dave Matthews, you know, had a start and came back and helped the city a lot with everything that happened there. But you just saw things that, you know, you wanted to be involved in. You were watching TV, you saw these artists, or maybe you got to a concert and you just wanted to make something happen so bad. And it's about just getting that start. It's not about knowing everything and being perfect when you start, just starting, taking that foot forward, and you learn as you go. And, you know, you're a great example of that. So how did that grow into you becoming, because we both know that law is specialized. And just because you're an attorney doesn't mean you're an attorney in the music business. Even though a lot of people think that, they think, well, you know, I just go get an attorney. It doesn't work that way. You have to have somebody that understands the music industry. And so how did you get involved in that side of it?
Right. The analogy I like to give is that I'm not going to hire a podiatrist to do brain surgery for me. Like, when people ask me for advice on areas outside of what my specialty is, you know, you have to be really careful about that, because you're right, it is very specialized. But what I realized when I was working on this online magazine with my girlfriends, and that just started to grow and build. And then I got into some artist management and booking. One of my last jobs before law school was East Coast Entertainment. Yeah. We all know it was very
regional. A lot of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and it was a great introduction to a lot of different areas of the music business. But what I felt was, it was still a space and time where it was hard for women, I think, just to be frank. And I thought, the most respected profession that I'm seeing here, the people that everyone's really listening to are the lawyers. So I think I'll go to law school. I'll be an entertainment lawyer. Well, I went to South Carolina for law school, and you don't just fall into an entertainment law job. It's the relationships that you build along the way, I think, that keep pushing you. And when I first came out of law school, I didn't end up doing entertainment law. I came here to Charlotte, worked for James McElroy and Deal, which is a very well-respected law firm, but not doing entertainment law. And I think what I learned from that, even though I continued with, you know, the music business outside of that, with pursuing other interests, some artist management, booking, things like that. But I think just that focus on other things gave me a different perspective on the entertainment business. I had a chance to work with so many different people, you know, from prisoners all the way up to, you know, very wealthy people who have estates they need to divide and things like that. So just got exposure to so many different types of people. And some of those relationships that started way back before law school carry forward through today. I mean, one of the people who gave me a reference for my job at Symphonic was somebody I met, you know, 30 years ago. So it's just, I think building those relationships along the way are what drive you forward, really.
Yeah. And part of being an attorney is, no matter what you're doing, is networking. They become really good networkers because that's, you know, how they get in certain doors. And even, you know, back when everybody, when the major label deal was the only thing and everybody's trying to get in, and it's still the right thing for some people, and some people it's not, you know, that it just depends on where you are and how can it benefit. It used to be the only thing, and now you have so much that you can do that that's not the only option, and it's not even going to be the only option to sell out stadiums, you know, coming in the future. But, you know, right now it's a big option for some of those people. But the key in that is somebody they know, and it's either a great artist manager or it's an entertainment attorney most of the time. And so knowing that, the reason is your understanding of not just the networking, but it seems to be the not just the contracts, but even the understanding of the ads manager, you know, or the terms and conditions of any kind of social media platform, having a good knowledge of that. And so to me, that's a great start into the music industry, and it gives you a leg up on a lot that's going on. So when you were talking about artist manager, you still work in artist management?
I've kind of had to take a step back from that with my role as general counsel at Symphonic, just because I love it and I'm passionate about it. But all managers are not created equal. And I think I was somebody who wanted to really give as much as I could of myself to that. And it's hard. You can't serve. What is that cliche about? You can't serve two masters or something like that. I just felt like I couldn't give our team of artists or roster of artists what they really needed. Because I think that is a full-time maximum effort.
Yeah. I used to be an artist manager, and that was, I decided after a while that I wanted to do other things, but I was one for years. And you're right, you're the team leader, you know, for the team, and you have to know so many different areas of it. But I could see how that definitely, you know, rolls into what you're doing now.
It's more for a perspective of like, there are a couple of hours a day I need to sleep. And so I'm so passionate about what I do. I love what I do. I say every day at Symphonic, and I know this is so silly, but I've been saying it since I got there. It's truly my dream job and everything I always wanted to do just kind of all rolled into one. And I'm so happy. Like, I couldn't be happier about it. And I couldn't give it everything I wanted to give it if I had these other things that I also wanted to give attention. And so at some point you just kind of have to decide, where am I focusing my energy, and am I doing a disservice to somebody else because I can't give it my full attention and my full energy?
And sometimes, and this, I don't think this is controversial because I know it to be true, sometimes artists need to really step up and learn their own role in artist management before they even attract the right manager. When I had Ryan Cunningham, which you know Ryan, and he was on the show, and we were talking about when an artist needs a manager. A lot of them think they, you know, need it out of the gate, and they have nothing to manage yet. Right. So as someone who's been an artist manager, what do you think some key things are for them that they need to know as an artist? And I know one thing we're going to roll into, which is your new role that has to do with that. But what are some things in addition that they need to know as an artist to to manage themselves until they get to that point.
I'm going to pull a little bit of an example of one of the artists that I was managing as I shifted into my role at Symphonic, Parker Gray. She's out of Canada. She's now living in Nashville. She is someone who I think understands what it takes to self-manage and then to rely on your outside team when you need them. She's someone who had a great vision about who she was as an artist, from marketing all the way down to just the elements of the songwriting, which I think is a very, I guess to pull on another example, a very Taylor Swift thing. Like, she knows how she wants to present herself, and it every little thread flows through, from the way the photographs are taken, the color right. themes, it matches up to the song lyrics. And I feel like Parker is somebody who gets that. And so she really didn't need a ton of direction from us from an artist management perspective. But what she more so needed in that emerging area of her career is, you know, introductions, relationships, and things right. of that nature, which she was also, you know, probably beyond anything that we could have done for her, because she's great at that too. I mean, she was great at all things. And I know that she's an artist who we're going to hear so much more from. But I think that's a great example of DIY as an artist, where it's not so much that you need the manager to step in and call every play for you. You already know most of the plays. You just need a backstop and somebody to help you along with some of those things, because it really is a full-time job. You know, I've had an opportunity to hear so many different people speak. And one of the most impactful was I heard The Dream was on a panel that I went to at Grammy Week a couple years ago. And he was saying how, despite being, you know, the pinnacle of songwriting and having all these accolades given to him, he wakes up every day hungry because he doesn't want anybody else to surpass him. He wants to continue putting out great material. He wants to always be on top and win the game every day. And I thought, that's cool. That's great advice. So no matter where you, what level you reach, you keep going. And so when you're on the bottom rung, it's even harder, but it's so much effort. And a lot depends on how much you want it.
That's, you know, that really is like the hunger of a fighter, you know, that eye of the tiger. I know it's kind of cliched, but that's true, because as artists now, you have so many tools at your disposal, and I'm amazed that so many are not taking advantage of these, and they don't even study to know what they are. You got books out here, whether they're by Hernstad or Donald Passman, that these are like play-by-play books, you know, a lot of times, or help you understand it. And I'm amazed people don't know about them, or they don't read them. And you have books on Spotify, whatever you want, there's a video or there's a book out there. Mm-hmm. If I was an artist today and you have those opportunities, I would at least spend an hour of my day, you know, doing it.
And it's complicated stuff. I mean, even for me, as a lawyer and my legal team at Symphonic, you know, we have rights issues come up, or we have debates with lawyers when we're negotiating deals, and we're like, okay, let's do an escalation meeting here. Let's talk about these things and concepts. Like, are we right here? Let's look at you know.
I love the curiosity of it.
Yes,
you know, everybody doesn't always have the answers. You're asking a curious question. Mm-hmm. Are we right here? Are we in the right here? And that's how you find real answers, not coming exactly. into the thing knowing every single thing.
You have to learn every day. And I think that's what makes our contracts evolve. That's one of the things I just love doing at Symphonic is, you know, when I came in, this was a brand new role, and they didn't have a general counsel before me. So I kind of got to start a little bit fresh and give everything a fresh coat of paint from what had been fed in through various external counsel. But I think listening to other lawyers outside who we're negotiating deals with, as much as I maybe don't want to say to them sometimes, hey, they might have been right about that point, it is something that will register with me. I'll go back and I'll look at it. Can I make this better? Can I make this stronger? How can I improve this? Because
that's so refreshing.
Otherwise we're not evolving. You have to do that every day.
Yeah. But you're in an industry that not only has evolved, it's almost transformed.
Yes.
And you know, with what you're doing with Symphonic, let's talk about them, how you got with them. And as we're doing that, you know, there's some people, even though it I don't like to make anybody feel like they don't know something, because the whole point of curiosity is there's not a dumb question. Let's ask. Right. It's better that you know. Tell them what general counsel is and how you, you know, evolved into this.
So I was in private practice here in Charlotte, had been in private practice for about 20 years, and I was really looking for that change back full time into the music business. And I felt like I did what I came to accomplish when I started in private practice in Charlotte. And it was really a speech of one of my former mentors who was retiring. And I haven't even talked to her about this, so it's the first time I'm really sharing it. But she gave this speech at her retirement party about, you know, all the things that she had done in this area of law. And I thought, that will never be me, because as much as I like what I'm doing, and I really love some of the clients I had and the connections that we had over time, I knew it wasn't what I was meant to do and what I was meant to end my career on. That wasn't the note that I wanted to end on. And so I made a commitment to myself at that point to really start laying the foundation. I got my bar license in Tennessee, in addition to, I already had North Carolina and South Carolina. Started traveling to Nashville on my own dime, just being there as much as I possibly could to network, make relationships. And then I thought, the next move is I need to land somewhere where I can really do this full time. And I started looking at going in-house, and I did not think, not that there's anything wrong with being with a major label, but I didn't think that would be the right fit for me. I really wanted to go indie, and I had learned distribution because I started this company with my friend Dan, who's in the band Tonic, and we'd known each other for forever, back from when I had the online magazine. And we started the artist management, and we were running distro for some of our clients. And I just fell in love with the distribution side of things and the independent nature of it, how it really allows artists to, I call it building your own empire. And it does. And so then I saw this advertisement from Symphonic on LinkedIn, and I said, it was like the birds were singing and, you know, this heavens opened up. And whoever wrote it, I don't know who wrote that post, but it just felt like it spoke to me, that it was the perfect role. And I thought, this is the one thing that I might actually feel a little bit disappointed if I don't get this. I really want to make this happen.
Well, when we come back, we're going to go really quick to a word from our sponsors. When we come back, I'm going to go over some questions with you, and we're going to link Symphonic into that.
Okay.
Okay, awesome. We'll be right back after this message from our sponsors. Welcome back to the R-Beat Studio. We're here for Local Music Somewhere. My guest today, Petra Center. And she's a general counsel of Symphonic Distribution. So let's pick back up and tell us what general counsel is.
So general counsel is, I guess, as the name would imply, a little bit of general everything as it relates to business and legal affairs. I touch pretty much every part of Symphonic, and It's been great. I can tell you a little bit about the company. It was founded in 2006 by our CEO, Jorge Brea. Kind of developed out of his mom's garage, I think, as the story goes, but he was putting out his own music independently, and then his friends caught on that he was doing a great job at it. So it just started to snowball and grow from there, and I think that's one of the things that I love about the company, is that really kind of grassroots effort from the beginning of it that has expanded into something that is now global. We are a global company. Primary business would be digital distribution, but we also have sync.
A lot of services.
Yeah, there's so many services, physical, sync, the publishing arm in Nashville. Like, I can't say enough great things about what that team is doing.
And the website has great explanations of the services. Yes. Love the way it breaks it down.
Our social media and marketing team is just top notch and incredible, and they host a really good party too. But I get, that's the fun part, is I get to touch on all of those different areas, because, you know, one day it may be the social media team, we've got somebody who's harassing us online, or I'm working with our A&R team on negotiating custom deals, or the finance team has a question about payments, or, I mean, as general counsel, you really do have to change those hats constantly. And I'm putting out fires all day long, but they're fires that I want, fires that I learn from, fires that are challenging, that, you know, cause me to have to really put in the effort. You know, you're right. Not on autopilot ever, because there's always
something changes.
Something new is coming at you. Yeah. And I've been able to build a pretty cool team since I've been there. The legal team has grown and expanded, and you know, I'm just really excited about where we're headed, and to be a part of it as part of the business development piece of it too, and doing great things like this, like coming into the studio to talk with you. They're very supportive of all of that. And I just want to call out our CEO for a minute while we're on Symphonic.
I mean, he built this.
He built this company.
He found the right team members. And
yeah, I will, just when I first met with him and I was second guessing myself from private practice to general counsel, because I'd been in private practice for so long. And I remember saying to him over coffee when we were talking about this role, thank you for taking a chance on me, because I know I'm not, you know, what you might think of as the first pick for this role. And he just looked straight at me and said, don't doubt that you're capable of doing this, because you are more than capable of doing this. And I thought,
perfect personality for it. I mean, you show up at these events and you bring a warmth, and yet you bring a lot of knowledge to these events that, you know, I've seen you on. And so that makes artists feel welcome. I think it's a perfect situation. Yes. Because it makes law not as intimidating.
Yes, and I think I've learned some valuable lessons from him in that regard. But I think it was just that initial, I believe in you. I was like, he's going to be my coach. Like, this is a solid team, and I can see that through the other teams at Symphonic. And he's tough when he needs to be, but it's also, you know, accepting us where we are and who we are. And I think that that's a great way to build a company and build a brand. And one of the slogans of the company is Symphonic is for everyone. And I also love that, because we have, unlike some of our competitors, an entry point for really everyone in the market, from our subscription service, where you're just really emerging and you're paying a subscription fee to put as much content as you want, all the way up to our bespoke, curated, you know, you're an established label or you're an established artist.
You have manager.
Yeah, right. So it really spans the range of the offerings there. And I think some of our competitors don't really have that hybrid, where maybe you're starting out with a subscription model and then you're graduating to another company. And I think that can get confusing for artists. If you can find a home like Symphonic, where you grow from the beginning stages through, I think that's incredible. And one of those success stories is Bad Bunny. And I won't say that Symphonic takes credit for that, but he did start out with us as being one of the early distributors of his content, which I think is super cool to see someone go from, you know, just an emerging artist on Symphonic to now one of the biggest Latin stars in the world. So I think it's incredible what you can do as an emerging artist who comes onto one of these platforms with a vision and content, and you just really know where you're going.
Yeah. Come with that vision.
I mean,
you're like the right service for it, but come with that vision and come with that work ethic and gain your own knowledge through it, because you are a business as an artist. You know, you're an entrepreneur, and you have way more control over your career than any time that I've ever seen. When I was an artist, management or having a label or whatever role I was playing at the time, it's just a different world. And you have so many tools. It's not like when you would get on social media platforms and you even had no help on social media platforms. Now you have tools for that. And of course, you know, you have the things that they haven't even touched on yet. Like, of course, blockchain and AI and I'll get your take on AI first, and then, you know, I'll come back in on that. But I know that's going to be one of the questions you get asked a lot, because it's on people's mind. And mm-hmm. And even when I'm at these things, they'll talk about the blockchain, but they don't explain what the blockchain is to people at first. They don't know why it's not completely caught on in the music industry, except with certain people. And the same thing with AI. The only thing they talk about AI is as an artist, you know, like, will you be a fake artist if you use AI, or will you be a fake writer? And there's so much more to it than that. But give me your take on that.
I think it's still a developing body of law. And I have spoken about this on other panels. And the way that I've sort of described it is, right now where we are, we're in this phase of the court of public opinion, where we're having conversations like this. And how do you feel about it? What are the outer edges of it? What are the good things about it? What are the bad things about it? So by the time these things start to sort of make their way through the legal system, whether that's through writing legislation, whether that's through cases that are being tried, those types of opinions are filtering their way into that process, so that eventually they come out in the law that gets written or put out, and the edges that are developed there. But we're softening those edges and trying to come to our agreements and terms on that now by having these conversations.
And being curious.
Right. And so what we're not completely, you know, anti-AI at Symphonic. We're not opposed to it being used in the right ways. And some of our teams do use it for efficiency. I use it sometimes for translations that a human will go back and then vet afterwards, because, you know, I'm not going to depend on AI when it's my bar license on the line. I will go back and review that, but it can add an element of efficiency there, and there's different ways you can use it. And so I think what you have to do is look for business opportunities. Like, what are the ways that this can help me? How can I use this, and how can I use it responsibly and ethically?
Right.
And go for that, and then look at also the ways that it can hurt you, and try to avoid those.
Well, and it's not flawless. I mean, it's a trainable technology.
Right.
And so as it, you know, came about, then more knowledge obviously was put into it, so it had access to more. And people are concentrating so much on the art, like I said, but there's also the fact of it's going to play a part in royalty payments and being able to find stuff, just like the blockchain, I believe, is.
Right.
It's going to be very involved in being a discovery tool for new artists. And in the same way that there are artists out there that don't have a Wikipedia, they don't have, if you Google their name, there's nothing on them because they haven't been creating that with press and articles and things like that. They haven't done that, so they're not in that. It's the same thing with AI. There are ways to even train that, so it's, you know, going to know your name, and you're going to be in there after a while. One of the things that I love, because, you know, there are people that are great at things like Sheets and Excel. Those are hard things. There are a lot of people that are not great at that, but you have things like, I think it's rose.com. That's an AI version, you know, of a spreadsheet now, and you're going to have more and more of that come on. So there are all of those things that AI will play a part in as well, right, that are going to be great tools. You know, people are actually not going to have to search hard. I know with me, one of the things that helped me with is writing press releases. It's not just the writing of the press release. When you write a press release, then you have to look up the press outlets. And you'll go in and you'll look up a town, and you used to have to Google all the stuff. You can type in now and you just get, like, it's like seconds. You have the people you need to know, you know, that are at that particular position, and you can just get the press releases all faster. When there are things like on all the platforms where there are money resources you don't even know you have for your song, that you'll be able to find through a search tool, like, you know, through a discovery tool. And so to me, that's been as important, and I don't see it in the conversation really at all. And I don't know why it's not there, but that's a pretty big thing for artists as entrepreneurs.
Well, I think it's easy to talk about the scary things and the scary aspects of things as opposed to all the good things that you just highlighted. And I do think some of the things that you've mentioned, like the attribution models, being able to identify gaps in royalties and where you may not be collecting. From conversations I've had in the industry, I know that some of those things are in the works and may already exist, and probably are going through vetting processes and things like that. But I do think that that's where we're headed, and that there will be good things that come of it. And I think the conversations I'm seeing at a lot of conferences right now are really more focused on the content creation piece of it. And I just think until there's more specific guidance on that, the best we can do is make judgment calls about what is responsible and ethical, right, and kind of go with that until there's something more specific and
tangible.
Which
comes with time. Yeah, right. That definitely comes with time.
It'll get itself worked out.
Yeah, and with speaking of time, you're in the Charlotte area a lot, and
yes,
you have helped with the scene there. And with Local Music Somewhere, we talk to artists all over the country in their particular scene, whatever city it is, and we've concentrated on Charlotte a good bit because it's such an emerging scene without a lot of the red tape sometimes that, you know, you'll have sometimes in a music capital. And the city is really behind making this a music area, making it a great area for creatives and the arts in general, but there's a big focus on music. We have mm-hmm. festivals coming in. We've had two conferences, music conferences, this past year that I think were on their second year as a music conference. And you and I had talked about this. It was showing that we had all these people that worked in music that lived in the same city, and we didn't even know each other right. or know it was there. And through this, it brought us together. You know, it made us aware mm-hmm. that the other people are here. And I have seen how the hotels and restaurants and the banking institutions and things like that are really paying attention to that music right now and know that's coming. And I have seen grants come into play with a lot of that. I've seen corporate funding come into play with a lot of that. And the education of the artists and the social capital, it's like, right. It's all coming at the same time to make Charlotte a great base and a great area, you know, for people to be able to see. And I believe we're going to see more and more artists come from this. What I'd like to get your take even on that.
I am really excited about it. I think we're sitting here today because you came to my panel at Confluence.
Absolutely.
I give Rick Thurman, Charlotte Center City Partners, a big amount of credit for
A large part of the push.
Right.
Huge.
For bringing this push, because I do think what you just said about driving industry people out of the woodwork here in Charlotte, it did let us know there are others just right. like us. We can have conversations. We can have mixers. We can do education. And then I think just more even on an individual basis, trying to recognize the people who are here, who are working hard. Jason Jett, I'm going to call him right now at Grind House.
He's supposed to be on the show, though.
He's incredible. When he first opened Grindhouse, I bought a bottle of champagne. I don't know if he'll remember this, but I took it to the studio and said, "Welcome, and I'm so happy that you're doing this." And I've just been a big fan and a supporter of his since then, because from what I see at that studio, he tries to educate. He talks to them about song splits. You know, he hosts these lock-ins, but he's making sure that he's doing the educational piece of it and being a really solid foundation for the music scene in Charlotte. And so I can't say enough great things about him. I think there's people flying under the radar that we don't necessarily know about or talk about. Also going to call out DJ Sud, who is the touring DJ for 2 Chainz. He, UNC Greensboro grad, is managing an artist right now who I think will be the next, maybe Post Malone or Kid Laroi, but Anella Harum. Fantastic artist. I've been on this train. You heard it here first. I love this. I love his music. I love what they're doing at No Stress Studios. So if you need a place to make music, if it's not Grindhouse, go check out No Stress and DJ Sud. I mean, they just have some really cool stuff going on over there.
That's great to know. And of course, I don't know if you know Sainted Choir from this area, but DJ Fannie Mae, who you see as the DJ at the football club, and her and Dennis, you know, they, Sainted Choir is just that America's Got Talent. They were in the finals for that. I mean, they've been on several of the big programs lately. And so there's another, you know, thing that's happening, that's coming from here, and it's becoming visible. Would it be okay to ask you some cool questions?
I'm up for some cool questions.
Okay. We have a thing that we do. We have one that we do with artists and another that we do with industry people. Like yourself. So can I have my questions queued up so we can ask Petra these? These are always a little bit fun. So my first question is for you, and I know you don't have a lot of advanced knowledge of this, but list them and most important to an independent artist. Key here is indie, because that's mm-hmm. our audience here. Who is the most important to an independent artist? The agent, business manager, lawyer, manager, tour manager?
Okay. So you would think I'm going to say lawyer because I'm a lawyer. However, you need somebody to quarterback for you first and foremost. And when you're at that stage where you can have the investment to have somebody on your team where it's time to, you know, make an investment in yourself, I would say probably a manager. I mean, I've debated this with others recently where a social media manager is also a really good one because it's very hard to get an agent for touring these days. I just think after the pandemic and coming back from that with everybody wanting to be on the road, that's a valuable income stream. Only so many venues, only so many tour slots to get. I think that's hard. I think it's hard to get a booking agent these days as an emerging artist. And so that may not be the way that you're going to grow the fan base immediately, as it was in the days of past where touring was a big part of building your fan base. Now it's more social focused. And so if you can get a social media manager who can help you come up with an angle that really fits who you are as an artist, I think that's a great investment up front, because as you grow the numbers, that's what drives the interest of somebody who may be a higher caliber manager or, you know, getting a better deal with a distributor like us or an indie label or even a record label. But you have to drive those numbers up and drive the interest. Otherwise, you're just kind of releasing music out into the wild. That I won't discourage that. You should release, always release. But somebody has to know that it's coming in order for them to listen to it. It could be a fantastic song, but if nobody knows it's out in the world, how will they know to go stream it?
And that's some of the greatest advice that I've heard given to indie artists about their team. Thank you. So that's a great question. Question number two. Independent artists, self-release, work frequently, words of wisdom. You kind of touched on this, but
yeah,
let's elaborate on it a little bit more.
I'm happy to elaborate. Don't get too precious about the music. I think there's some success stories out there where, you know, artists are, I think production is one of the most expensive parts of releasing new music, where you feel like you need to work the music. It needs to be produced. It needs to be engineered. It needs to be mastered. It needs to be all these things that if you can't do it yourself, and again, a studio like Grindhouse is great if you can, because you can just, you know, it's like a monthly WeWork type thing for a studio, which is an awesome concept if you know how to do those things yourself. But if you can't, and you have to pay a producer, that can get super expensive. But don't worry about making it so polished. You know, I see a lot of artists now going on socials and saying, here's a clip of something I wrote, and it's really just them live or very rough demo that they haven't put a lot into. And sometimes I think working the music too much takes away that raw element of just being a really emerging artist. You know, that's the part of it that really reels the audience in sometimes, right? That authenticity and realness of it.
That's exactly what they love, just something genuine.
Right.
Days.
And so don't worry about making it so perfect. You know, it's more important to stay on a consistent cycle so that with the volume of content out there, you don't get lost in the shuffle. When you're when you grow that fan base and they know, I'm not going to have to wait or guess when the next track is coming. This music is coming every 4 weeks, every 6 weeks, every 8 weeks. I can depend on getting another new song from my person that I've connected with here on socials, right? And I really like what they're doing. You got to keep it coming.
Yeah, because people will forgive rawness, but consistency is a metric,
right?
And they're expecting something from you at certain times, and you have to always deliver on metrics.
Yes, agree.
Okay, let's give me question three. Advice for artists co-writing with other artists.
I don't think there's any bad co-writes. I think that just like any other profession, when you're an artist, you're going to deal with people who bring out different aspects of your personality. I work sometimes with people who make me feel frustrated or confused or angry or the whole range of them. Sometimes happy, sometimes, wow, I learned something from them. I feel enlightened. And so I think getting into a room with co-writers who might not be your typical choice, where it's like, how am I going to align with this person? They're making me feel this way. That's what music is about. I mean, right. You're trying to convey emotion. And if you write with the same type of people all the time, you get the same type of product. So challenge yourself to deal with different personality types, different genres of music. It's like, oh, wait, I do pop, they do rock. How are we going to fit together? I don't know. Go sit down and figure it out.
Curiosity.
Yes.
It causes something to grow. Curiosity and pain cause you to grow a lot.
Exactly.
And it used to be the thing, though. It used to be the thing with labels after the singles economy, and then it became the album economy. You used to have the same producer on the entire album or the same songwriters on the, you know, the thing, and you don't get the variety and the testing of an artist that you can really get that causes the growth unless you do just what you're saying right there.
Right. But from the legal perspective, make sure you work these things out from the beginning. I think, you know, as Charlotte is evolving as a music destination and, you know, what we want it to be here, take a cue from Nashville. I think they, because it's such a collaborative space there and there's a lot of co-writing going on, they've all figured this out. They know to work out these splits and things going into the room. They know what to do as far as signing contracts with their producers and what that looks like on the back end as the music gets put out into the world. Don't leave that for later. There have been a couple of times where we wanted to pursue artists with Symphonic who had maybe viral moments or whatever, but because they had some legal issues that were hanging around from not having resolved these things with their collaborators up front, it really, you know, hindered our ability to move forward as quickly as we would have liked because they had other things to resolve. Don't leave those things for later, even though it's not sexy to walk into a co-write and talk about those things. You have to.
You have to. And that's great advice to end on today because, you, just like you're saying, you know, with Charlotte, when you have a Nashville songwriters round that comes to town, mm-hmm. go there. You know, talk to those people. Listen to their stories. Go up and meet them. They're right there and around. They will talk to you. And watch videos of the things they've learned. Contact people like Symphonic and that can really, you know, they have the experience. They can get you around things you will not have knowledge of, and you will save yourself a lot of money and keep yourself from making a lot of mistakes. You know what? I said end on. Let me ask you one more question before we go.
Okay.
Let me have the question pulled up. Let's have the question pulled up about Petra. No, I want the other one about her. Go ahead. I'll just ask you, what is your favorite, I would say, Petra moment that you've had in this industry?
I would have to take it all the way back to when I first started and was so young and excited about being in the music business. And I had this online magazine with my girlfriends, and we applied for this crazy contest. I think it was a collaboration between Levi's jeans and maybe Spin magazine, but we had to send in a video, and you were applying to go on tour with the Goo Goo Dolls and Sugar Ray. And so we took a chance, and we made this really silly little video and sent it in. This was like way before even you would send something like a video by email. Like we actually had to physically mail this thing in. And we got picked, and we went on this tour. We had a Levi's-themed tour bus. We got all branded. They took us shopping. We got media trained and gave media interviews in each city. And I just remember that as being super fun. And now that I know more about touring and the business and what the crew actually has to do, and it's not host parties like we were doing, it's real work. My husband was a touring professional for a long time. But that was a really fun time. I think it just made us feel like our hard work there that we were doing kind of for free had paid
That's
off.
That's so cool. That's very cool. Well, thank you for being with us today. You were just such a wealth of knowledge.
Oh, thanks.
And just so great to have you on the show. You're so great to talk to. And I just want to, for all our listeners out there, just to let you know, we have people like this on the show because these are things that you need to learn to get where you want to go in the music industry. This is more than just a dream for you. Everybody has a chance at this if they will put in the work, if they will have the knowledge, if they will collaborate with other artists and just learn how it's done. So again, thank you for tuning in here at rbeats.com, Local Music Somewhere, and we will see you next time.
Always remember, with you, we are. Our Beats podcasting crew wants to take this moment to thank you. for listening to RBeats Radio and Media Streaming Network.